Welcome to the Chengdu Gaming Federation podcast. My name is Charlie. I'm joined by Austin. Say what's up.
Hey.
So this is our first podcast. We have never recorded a podcast for the Chengdu Gaming Federation before, but we've been doing events for about 2 years now, and we both listen to a lot of podcasts, and we thought it would be fun to talk about kind of gaming in China and what we've been up to, and I guess just indie and retro games in general, since I've recently been starting to listen to a couple of gaming podcasts, mostly retro game podcasts. I thought they're really cool. And being in China, we kind of have something of an interesting perspective on it, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, finding gamers here and setting up games and just trying to play online here has been a very different experience than gaming in America, I guess.
Yeah. So obviously, anyone listening to this will probably know we're not Chinese. We're both American and we're living in China. If we were Chinese talking about gaming in China, it would be a completely different
discussion. We'd be talking about discussion. LOL.
League of Legends.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny that your girlfriend also plays League of Legends, except on the phone, right?
Well, the League of Legends knockoff. I mean, but Tencent acquired League of Legends and then went and made a duplicate of the game on mobile, basically. And she is obsessed with that. She plays that, I don't know, for like hours a day and like tunes everything else out.
Yeah, so my girlfriend is the same way, except she's playing the actual League of Legends.
Yeah.
And so she spends hours playing that. And then it's like I have my own kind of gaming interests. And there's like actually not a ton of overlap between the two of us, which I find interesting. She's playing games, I'm playing games. We're rarely playing the same games, unless it's like Tower Fall or Street Fighter.
Well, yeah, I mean, I would say both of us with our Chinese girlfriends, the only time we see an overlap of interest is with fighting games. And I do think fighting games have a popularity here. Specifically, I've noticed King of Fighters is pretty prominent here. There's
SNK
a lot of
games are popular here in a way that they never were that I saw in America.
I mean, I played Samurai Showdown is SNK, right?
Yeah.
I played Samurai Showdown 2 on my Game Boy.
Actually had that? You purchased that?
No, I think a friend left it at my house.
A Japanese friend? That's a joke. It didn't have to be Japanese.
Yeah.
But might have been Asian.
Asian.
Might have been Asian, though, to be playing Samurai Showdown. To me, King of Fighters always looked like a Street Fighter ripoff. And it's like Street Fighter's the authentic one and King of Fighters is not. But they're both Japanese games. Capcom is Japan. It's just one of them successfully
dominated the world.
Yeah, it became international. And
one of them
and the other one didn't.
Yeah, in Asia.
Didn't SNK make the Neo Geo or something? Or was there... I think that there is a relationship between those two.
I am not sure about that. I mean, I do remember Neo Geo Pocket... And there was like a ton of SNK games on that.
All the SNK games.
Yeah, so it's possible, but I don't remember at the moment. But
so anyway, for anybody who's listening to this would probably not know what Chengdu is and would probably also not know what the Chengdu Gaming Federation is. So before we get in deeper into Neo Geo and SNK, we should just explain kind of what's going on here. So we live in a 1.5 tier city in China, which is called Chengdu. So it's kind of it's the fourth biggest city in China after Shanghai, Beijing, and Guangzhou, I believe.
Do they really call tiers by half, or are you just winging it right here?
I'm not the first to say that, but Chengdu is the largest of the second tier cities. So much so that it's considered to be between the two. I don't know. In any case,
it's the capital. Right?
It's the capital of Sichuan province. Yeah, and it's the largest, kind of culturally largest city in Western China. Chongqing actually has a higher population.
And home of the pandas.
Home of the pandas, right? And hot pot and beautiful women.
Yeah.
And the Chengdu Gaming Federation.
Yes.
So we've been living here for quite a while. Me, a lot longer than you.
Yeah, like five times as long.
Five times as long, literally.
Yeah.
So, and I have another podcast, the Chengdu Living Podcast, which is about Chengdu specifically. So we've been living here for a while and for almost 2 years have been doing retro and indie game events in Chengdu under this brand, this thing called the Chengdu Gaming Federation, which is kind of an enthusiast group of retro and indie game fans and some people who work in the game industry or come from the gaming industry or have some kind of connection with the gaming industry, as I do. And as we get into our personal background, we'll get into that.
Yeah.
So you were actually, to talk about the origin real quick, you were doing gaming events kind of before me. So just when we talk about the way that this started, I had been working in a Chinese game company for 5 years, and it was kind of a challenging job for a lot of reasons. But one of them was I wasn't really working on the type of games that I like. And I felt I was surrounded by game industry stuff all the time and really wanted an outlet to promote the types of games that I really like, the types of games that I think are good and that are a social positive, as opposed to some of the games which I was working on, which have kind of some negative things which I don't like. So I kind of got the idea to start hosting game events. And especially since I had been traveling regularly overseas in the United States and I had visited a lot of indie game events there. And so I thought it'd be cool to do something like that in China. But I kind of always had this idea in my head and never really took action on it. And then I met you. So tell me about what you were doing first.
Well, I moved here to focus on events and music, which is, I guess, how we got to meet initially through Dojo, I guess. And
House Party Project.
Yeah. And I was a resident at a club here we go, and was doing a weekly event and kind of still learning about event management. And it was not the best event. It had a lot of ideas, too many ideas, I think, for one person to really incorporate into a successful event.
What was the event? What was the gaming part of it, I guess?
So specifically, I was trying to showcase games that I thought were kind of really cool indie games, like, you know, with cool aesthetics, fun gameplay, things like Heavy Bullets or Nidhogg, things like that. And not always with a multiplayer focus, just because, I mean, it was a middle of the week event at a club. I couldn't always expect there to be a lot of people. And I was DJing and, you know, I was busy. So I couldn't always be there focused on the gaming aspect of things. I would give someone a controller, tell them, figure it out, and, like, go back to the DJ booth.
I remember the first time I went there and saw that. And I don't remember how I got there, but I remember going inside, and it was the club I had been to many times. I DJed there also. And it was a weeknight. There were not many people there. And I remember there was a projector mounted on the ceiling, yeah, which had like an off-kilter display on the wall.
On the wall.
Yeah. And I think it was Broforce the first time I saw it. But it was like a couple people standing around in like a really kind of big, empty,
awkward
room. A little bit awkward. Yeah. A little bit awkward. And but I thought that it was really cool that you were taking the initiative to do something.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, even though it wasn't like perfect, and we've made a lot, like an incredible amount of progress since then, but it was, I think, instrumental that I saw that you were doing something and taking action.
You approached me, I think, that night and said, I think this, you know, this gaming concept is cool, and would you be interested in doing a project together? And I was like, I am doing a project. And you were like, nah, let's do something new and focus on the games. And that's how Chengdu Gaming Federation came about.
Right, right.
We spent a little, you know, several times meeting and discussing things and coming up with what our concept would be. But basically, you know, from that night, we decided to go forward and do this project together.
Right, so
which I don't think it would have turned into what it is now with, you know, without the both of us doing this together.
I think you're right. So we did the first event on May 13th of 2015, almost 2 years ago, and we played Nidhogg and Broforce
yeah
at the first event
at Machu Picchu 2, right? We started
I think
out
you're
at
right.
Machu Picchu 2, I think.
I think you're right. I think it was at Machu Picchu 2. And
which is now the only Machu Picchu.
Yeah, so Machu Picchu is kind of a sort of historic venue in Chengdu. I think it might have been at the original Machu Picchu, actually. I'm not sure. We need to look that up. Anyway, it was at one of the Machu Picchu events. It was May of 2015. Nidhogg and Broforce. These are two of our all-time favorite games. I'm looking at a list of all the events we've done here. It's about 70 events or so. And over the past year, or maybe less than a year, it's been a weekly event every Thursday night from 9 p.m. until midnight.
Yeah.
So we could spend just, I think, hours and hours talking about all these games. There's so many games to talk about, and there's so much for me, I feel like I've learned so much about these games, putting them in this kind of environment and having other people play them and kind of feedback on them. You know, people who are new to games, people who don't play games, people who are just hanging out in Berlin House, which is where we now host the event.
I mean, I would say from playing in the settings that we do, sometimes we've had games where we think, this is a great game, we really enjoy it, and then we bring it into this setting. Not to say that it's some of the games we've played are bad games, but some of them in this setting have been much more suitable, and some have been really difficult.
Right, so one, just to give a couple examples, one that's been really incredibly successful at CGF, which I would not have realized otherwise, is Clusterpuck.
Yeah.
So that's a game, I think we played it somewhere, my house or your house or someone's house. And it was fun, but it did not like, you know, really strike us as like a legendary local multiplayer game.
And part of that also was it was just maybe you and me, maybe, you know, you, me, and, you know, Dan or one of our friends or something, but in the setting that we played, you know, with friends of ours, some of which are sports enthusiasts or whatever, and getting into this competitive nature with much more players, you know, really, really changes the feeling of watching the game, of playing the game.
When you put these games into a social setting, there's something interesting which happens, which is not the same as playing by yourself or playing at your house. And kind of instrumental to CGF has been taking mostly indie games, indie and retro games, and putting them into a social atmosphere and kind of mixing those two things together. So it's like a bar and indie games. It's almost like a video arcade, like that type of vibe a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, like having the next people waiting to play at Street Fighter or something.
Right,
you know, just
right.
Sitting there waiting, watching, and thinking
if there's
about,
some way
who am
we
I going
to
play today?
We need a piece of glass for people to put their quarters on. some kind of system to declare who's next with a quarter and glass would be really nice. Just a throwback to the 1990s arcade.
That would be cool. And also, it's not always for someone new to the event. They're like, hey, how do I play next?
Yeah. Oh, man. Just thinking about the glass and quarters, such a good memory. I used to remember playing Killer Instinct in the arcade. And when you want to play, you'd like, I remember being like a 13-year-old just like sheepishly putting the quarter on the glass, be like, oh shit, this guy's next. It's great culture that's gone now. So that's a good example, which you Clusterpuck's a good example of a game which really worked, surprisingly. One that didn't work, surprisingly, was Worms.
Oh man.
So both of us had this in our so brilliant game. We both love Worms, but that just has never worked. It just didn't work. We actually tried it more than once, just thinking like, surely we can get this to work, but it's just too complex.
I mean, it was some of the new players were like, how do I select a weapon? What does this weapon do? Oh, fucking shit. I just jumped off into the water and I'm dead.
Yeah, people are shooting themselves. They're running out of time. Everyone's waiting. It's just a disaster.
I remember one person. It was like every time it would cycle back around to her turn, it would be about a minute of describing what she needs to do, and then her time would run up, and it would go to the next person, and every single turn she did nothing.
During that time, it's like 40 seconds of everyone just like doing nothing, watching this worm just slowly look around or like futz through the menu.
Yeah.
Yeah. So these
But I think that out of coming out of that is, like I said, one of the greatest things about this social environment and having the games that do work is the accessibility of the game. Finding those games that are offered something like Clusterpuck offers enough strategy and teamwork without any of the complications that something like Worms has. It's a one or two button game,
right,
with enough strategy in it to keep even, you know, there's that a nice balance between what a new player and an experienced player might be able to offer in that game.
Yeah. So we've just hosted our 20th tournament recently, which was NFL Blitz.
Yeah.
So we've kind of selected pretty much the best games that we've played, I think, and done tournaments around those. So the tournament list is kind of like a best of, a greatest hits kind of list. So I'll list off some of those. I think that anybody who's listening to this who's interested in indie games will probably know most of these. So Towerfall was the first tournament we did.
And one of the most popular games that I think in our playthroughs of different games that people have been most receptive to.
Yeah, Towerfall's been just maybe the best indie
awesome
game. Maybe the really, I mean, it's definitely a standout. We went a year playing Towerfall, like several times a week or something.
Yeah, dude, like countless hours of just staying up, dude. Like.
Right. So, okay, so Towerfall was the first tournament. That was on July 29th in 2015. Next one we did was Nidhogg. We've done that one twice.
Yeah.
That's the only tournament I think we've done twice. We did Clusterpuck then we did Samurai Gun, which is very similar to Towerfall. And then we did Mario Kart 8 on Wii U.
That was probably the biggest turnout for any event we've had, excluding maybe the final night at the original Machu Picchu.
Yeah, I think there was 30-something participants in that tournament.
Yeah, and then there was also another like huge crowd of people just hanging out there. But yeah. That was
on my birthday. That was Heist's birthday too.
And then 2 days after my birthday, all our birthdays lining up.
Perfect. Yeah. That was a lot of fun. We've done Rocket League, Street Fighter 2, NBA Jam, Lethal League, Super Smash Bros., GoldenEye, N64, Soul Calibur, Super Bomberman. We did a Mario Olympics tournament during the Olympics, the summer 2016 Olympics, which was Mario Tennis and Mario Strikers.
Yeah.
That was fun.
Great games.
That was fun, yeah. We did Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2.
The only tournament
the winner of that tournament sitting right across from me. You won that one. You dominated that one. Did I even get second place in that one?
No, you didn't.
Yeah, you easily won that one. Power Stone 2 and Super Puzzle Platformer and NES World Championships. And then NFL Blitz, which was already mentioned. And then our next tournament is Pac-Man.
Yes, that's going to be fun.
It's looking at this list, you know, we have gone through all of the basic, like, go-to tournament competitive games, and then some, and then, like, quite a few. As you get into over 20 tournaments, it's becoming increasingly challenging, I feel like. But Pac-Man is definitely a classic that has been overlooked since we haven't gotten to that yet.
Yeah.
So before we wrap this up, we should talk a little bit about, I guess, ourselves and our background and kind of what our history with games is. So just to start with myself, I am 35 now. So I was born in 1981 and I first started playing games with the NES. And I remember my father bought the NES before I even knew what video games were because he's a technophile, audiophile, you know, electronics guy. So he bought the NES, brought it home, and I didn't know what it was. I was 5 years old. The NES came out in 1985. And I vividly remember playing Super Mario Brothers the first time. And that was kind of the beginning of playing games. And since then, I've kind of pretty had most consoles growing up. Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis, 32X, Sega CD, GameCube, all the PlayStations. I skipped Wii and skipped Wii U, but
not a shame on that part.
Yeah, 360, Xbox, the original one, most consoles, and came to China in 2005 and started working in the game industry here in 2010. And it's been a really interesting journey working in the gaming industry and coming into the gaming industry through China, not having any kind of professional background in, you know, programming or game design, now that there are academic programs where you can learn game design. But in 2010, I kind of just started working with this group of app developers, and sort of together we decided it'd be fun to make a game. And none of us had ever made a game before. And that company blew up and became a very large, influential company here in Chengdu, which now employs 400 people. So that is kind of my gaming history in a nutshell.
All right. For me, I also got started on the NES. I'm a little bit younger than you. And I was born after the NES came out. I was not quite old enough to, you know, put my desire out there for wanting that. But when I was very young, my babysitter would bring her NES over, and I would just sit there. I remember vividly playing Legend of Zelda, Duck Hunt, Mario. She had the power pad, which we would mess around with track and field.
Classic. Yeah. Did you guys do the thing where you run really fast and then jump off the pad and your guy jumps like 15 feet? Everyone probably did that.
That was fun. That was fun. And it was really cool as a kid getting, I don't know, like the physical interactivity of that kind of experience. And I got a little bit older, and I had a birthday coming up, and Sega Genesis had just come out, and I was going back and forth between getting a Sega or a Super Nintendo. And I don't know, being influenced by being a kid in the 90s and stuff, I thought Sonic looked like a cooler mascot than
sure.
this
I can see that.
Wonky-looking Italian plumber.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm going to get a Sega. I had a Sega channel, which was this weird cartridge that hooked up to your cable.
Your phone line.
Yeah, and then you could have like 300 games to play every month or something. So I started playing a lot, but eventually transitioned back over to Nintendo. And I was a Nintendo fanboy for years before I finally went back and got PlayStation 2, and eventually filled out my collection as I got older. I did get a Wii, and I got a Wii U, which I kind of regret, but hopefully I'll jailbreak that and actually use it as something more than collecting dust. But I've never worked in the industry like you have. I've considered it, and I still have an interest. I've done some classes on like 3D modeling and things like that, but I've never done anything with my skills as far as working in the industry, which you have a lot of experience with now at this point. And I am a general hobbyist, a passionate one, though.
Yeah.
And in recent years, I've gotten back into PC gaming a lot. We both have. So that's where my heart is at this point in time. Long live Steam.
Absolutely. Yeah, both of us are pretty enthusiastic about Steam as a platform over consoles. Although consoles, there are a lot of great things to say about those too. So we're going to wrap this up now. Before we do that, I'm going to mention our website, which is at chengdugaming.com. Chengdu is spelled C-H-E-N-G-D-U. And we have a couple other things on the website which are worth checking out. We have a WeChat group, which is where most of our discussion happens. And for anybody who's not in China, WeChat is like WhatsApp for China, essentially. And so it's a chat application, and the group is about 160 people, something like that.
Yeah.
So there's regular discussion about games in there. We have a couple DJ mixes. I made one. Dan made one. Did you make one too, I think?
No.
No. Okay. Anyway, these
although
are...
Although I do have a gaming one that maybe I'll give you
interesting.
Later,
we should add that on there.
Yeah.
So there's a couple... These are game-themed mixes. They're kind of filled with references to games we like and play and so on. We've got a page on some emulation information. In a future podcast, we'll definitely talk about emulation and go into that. That's a whole topic on its own. And a multiplayer game list for people who are in China. And that'll be another podcast as well, I suspect. So there's, if you play online games in China and you're not Chinese, there's actually a lot to that. And so that's a topic we'll discuss. Yeah, that's a big topic. So thank you for listening to this. And last thing, what game are you playing recently?
I just finally completed Downwell.
Yes.
And that was, first of all, I really appreciate, if you haven't beat it, wait till the end of the credits. It's pretty, it's nice.
I actually saw the ending when Dan beat it at my house.
Oh, it's so charming. It's really good. Gives you purpose for the whole thing. What a great challenging game though. And from
fantastic game. I haven't beat it, but man, it's really, really good. It's very tough. It's a lot easier on Steam though, I find, than on mobile.
I don't know because I haven't played mobile, but I think having the controller really is really helpful. And from that interest, I've gone into another game called Goner, which is similar to Downwell, but more psychedelic, I guess, and left to right as opposed to up and down.
So I've been playing Darkest Dungeon the last 2 days. Just installed this game recently. It was much talked about, I guess, about a year ago or whenever it was released.
Just before it got released, it was getting a lot of hype. It was funded on Kickstarter, wasn't it?
I think it was funded on Kickstarter. It has gotten a lot of hype.
Yeah.
And I just didn't check it out for a long time.
Ignored the hype.
Yeah, ignored the hype because it's just overwhelming with the quantity of games on Steam. I mean,
we both have like even 600 plus games.
Even the if you just talk about, you know, the 2% best games on the console, it's still way too many for any person who has a job and a girlfriend and other things to do to keep track of everything. But Darkest Dungeon, really enjoying it. It's a really dark game, kind of about the psychological hardship of war, battle, combat, I guess. So that's where
I mean, like dungeon crawling, right? I mean, war, I would say that'd be like it's not like this war of mine, right? It's more like, I mean, I don't know. I guess I have to check it out. But
you have to check it out. Yeah. This war of mine is really about like the real life situation of being in a real war, not like a video game war. And Darkest Dungeon is about like the mental anguish of being in combat or like facing death in combat situations. So that's all for now. Thanks for listening.